You're listening to the audio version of Leadership Is Not About You, published in 2014 by Lifelong Leaders. This audio version is read by the author, Tim Milburn. That's me. Introduction. It's not about you, but it starts with you. The title of this book is a punchline, not to the end of a joke, but to a principle. I addressed the first part of the principle in my previous book, Leadership Starts With You. I couldn't write this book until I wrote that one. All of the lessons in Leadership Is Not About You make a lot more sense when you take the time to invest in the ideas in Leadership Starts With You. It's simple, really. Leadership starts with you, but it's not about you. The premise of this book is about leadership that focuses on others after you have focused on yourself. The way you lead you affects the way you lead others, and it plays a key role in whether others are willing to follow you. If you have not read Leadership Starts With You, I encourage you to put this book down or stop listening and begin with that one. Don't worry, I'll be here when you get back. For those of you who might be a little short on time or cash, here's a snapshot of what I mean when I say leadership starts with you. Leadership starts with one person, you. It starts there because any attempt to lead others well without leading yourself well typically ends up causing a great deal of frustration. This isn't about selfishness. In fact, it's the first and most necessary step towards selflessness. The key principle is that leadership of yourself is the foundation for any effort you make in the leadership of others. The way you lead yourself helps others determine if you are a leader worth following. They are asking this question: if I can't trust you to lead you well, then how can I trust you to lead me well? What does it mean to lead yourself well? It begins by learning to take responsibility, both for your choices and the consequences of those choices. You don't always have to be right, but you do have to be honest. Leading yourself first means you work hard to make good decisions about your own life. Small and big decisions that accumulate. Decisions that end up determining the kind of person you are going to be and the kind of things you are going to do. You develop discipline in your life. Others are watching the effect your decisions have on your actions and behavior. They can see and feel the ripples your actions create. Over time, people learn whether they can trust you based on your consistency and your character. You grow your character through your daily decisions and your response to those decisions. Too many people have lost the opportunity to lead others as a result of leading themselves poorly. They had to step down were removed from leadership. How many of us can name someone whose influence came to a crashing halt because of a moral failure, a fatal flaw, or a lack of discipline in his or her life? Please, take the time to build your own life into something worth following. Then we'll be ready to move on to the next step, adding others into the mix. I'm a big fan of challenge courses. They are a great way to connect a group of people you're trying to form into a team. The high elements take courage and push people out of their comfort zones, but it's the low elements where you get a good feel for the dynamics in the group. One of the low elements we use is called the wall. Because, well, it's a wall. The wall stands about 12 to 15 feet high. The goal is to get your entire team over the wall. There's a ledge on the opposite side of the wall to stand on once you climb over. It enables someone to lean over the top of the wall and reach down to assist others. Once again, the goal is to get the entire team over the wall. I love to watch as one or two people begin to take a leadership role. It's not that they bark orders or tell everyone what to do. They simply put themselves in the best position possible to get the entire team over the wall. So here's a pop quiz. Are you in the best position to do this for your team? Sometimes they'll go first and stand on the ledge to pull people over the wall. And sometimes they stand on the ground and push people up and over the wall. They never seem that concerned about getting themselves over the wall. It's more about getting everyone over the wall. You can tell who the leader of a group is by his or her shoulders. The leader is the person whose shoulders bear the responsibility. You see, leadership begins with responsibility. The responsibility for one's decisions and the responsibility for the team's direction. If all you want to do is get yourself over the wall, you're not the kind of leader most people are looking for. The effective leaders put the people around them on their shoulders. I've seen those who want to be the leader because they want to be on the shoulders of the people around them. They want the recognition. They want the accolades. If that's your motive, if you want the spotlight, then maybe you should try out for American Idol. Leaders take the responsibility to put themselves in the best position for their team to succeed. Sometimes they have to push, and sometimes they have to pull. They know it will take a group effort to accomplish their objective. You aren't the leader if you just get yourself over the wall. Besides, that's not much of an accomplishment. Some people enter into leadership hoping to attract followers like some sort of Pied Piper. They mistakenly think those around them will automatically do what they say and respect them because they're in the front of the line, or perhaps they're playing the flute. True leadership, the essence of what people long for and desperately want to follow, entails an appropriate level of humility that brings out the best in others. True leaders possess the capacity to recognize that leadership is about serving others instead of being served. Jim Collins, in his book Good to Great, illustrates this idea in a way that I'll sum up here. When it's all about you as a leader, you'll look in the mirror, beat your chest, and tell yourself how good you are when things go well. When something goes wrong, you look out the window and blame those around you. But when you understand that leadership is not about you, you'll look out the window and give those around you the credit when things go well. And when things go wrong, you humbly look in the mirror and ask yourself, what could I have done differently? You can inspire your followers through the opportunities you have to get behind them. You are in a position to challenge them to live up to their potential and do their best. You can help others realize their unique gifts and talents and skills and passions. You will find that people follow your leadership because you serve their needs rather than strut your stuff. When you understand that leadership is not about you, you'll put the needs of others before your own. You'll make others feel better about themselves when they're in your presence. You'll connect them to other people and projects where they'll discover a greater sense of purpose and meaning in their lives. When it's not about you, you understand that it takes giving away all you can for others instead of taking all you can for yourself. Your leadership position is a platform. You get to choose how you use it. Will you be selfish or selfless? In my previous book, Leadership Starts With You, I encourage you to spend time investing in yourself so you can be at your best. When you develop that discipline, it's time to take the next step and begin to lead others in a way that truly makes a difference. This book is a collection of ideas and principles designed to help you become the kind of leader that others want to follow when they don't have to. One who leads through inspiration, influence, and example. The kind of leader who is motivated by the idea of guiding and growing a group of people toward a better future. It seems so obvious, But the first criterion for any leader is that he or she should have the desire to lead. And by lead, I don't mean that the would-be leader simply wants to be in charge or stand as the figurehead. True leadership is about service, accountability, and sacrifice. Any leader who wants to inspire the best in others accepts all three of these things willingly. This whole thing starts with you. But at some point, you come to the realization it's not really about you. I know. It feels like a paradox. According to dictionary.com, paradox is defined as a statement or proposition that seems self-contradictory or absurd, but in reality expresses a possible truth. Paradox or not, the type of leadership that starts with you but isn't about you is leadership worth following. I would tweak the dictionary definition just a little bit. Instead of saying this paradox expresses a possible truth, I believe this paradox is a truth with all kinds of possibilities. As long as we're willing to learn and grow, we will discover ways to make a difference in the lives of others. Enjoy the journey as we unpack these possibilities together. Let's begin. Chapter 2, The Rhodium Rule Revisited. Did you hear the word rule and want to skip this chapter? I hope it doesn't scare you. It's a good rule. I know because I created it, and I don't like rules. It was inspired by the Golden Rule, but it's different. Very different. Most people recognize the Golden Rule when they hear it. Although most people doesn't include my youngest daughter. I asked her one time if she knew the Golden Rule. She nodded in affirmation. It's monkey see, monkey do. Thanks, sweetheart. Here's some lovely parting gifts. You can apply my rule to your life today and see the effects immediately. It's at the heart of leadership that starts with you, but isn't about you. One of the differences between my rule and the Golden Rule is who it starts with. The Golden Rule starts with an emphasis on others. It states, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. My rule starts with an emphasis on you. I call it the Rhodium Rule. I know you're probably wondering, what the heck is rhodium? I didn't know either, but you can learn a lot of cool stuff on the internet. Rhodium is one of the elements on the periodic table, atomic number 45, and is considered to be a precious metal. In fact, it's often used to protect other precious metals. It keeps things from corroding. That's handy, but it's not why I named my rule after it. I asked my friend who is a chemistry professor, and we should all have a friend like that, what's so special about rhodium? He looked at me and he said, it's more precious than gold, and it's a catalyst. Wow, it's rare and it gets things going. That confirmed it for me. Here it is, the Rhodium Rule. Do unto yourself what will inspire the best in others. Do you see the difference between this rule and the Golden Rule? The Rhodium Rule encourages you to start with yourself. It's the motive behind what you do to you that makes it about others. The way you personally live, work, grow, and lead can serve as an example that encourages the best in others. You work hard to create the best version of yourself so you can inspire others to be the best they can be. It's not about dictating your demands or forcing people into a certain mold of your choosing. You don't use your power or position to manipulate people. You use your own example to motivate people. You model what it looks like to be a disciplined, productive, and trustworthy person out of a desire for others to exhibit those same characteristics in their own lives. When you apply the Rhodium Rule to your life, you seek the best for others by striving to be the best you can be. For me, the word best simply means reaching toward your potential at any given moment. When you follow the Rhodium Rule, you lead yourself in a way that actually makes other people's lives better. You push into your potential in order to inspire others to do the same. You rise above mediocrity in your own life to show others that it's possible for them as well. If you adopt the Rhodium Rule as a guiding principle, it could revolutionize your leadership. By adopt, I mean apply it in your daily life. You can't just believe it. You have to behave according to it. Here's what I mean. First, you have to do something. The Rhodium Rule is based on action. You can't simply nod your head in affirmation. It must be more than belief. It requires a certain type of behavior. It's you doing everyday, habitual, life-enhancing behaviors, doing your best to lead yourself well. Secondly, your motive is this: do your best to inspire the best. Lots of people are into self-improvement for improvement's sake. I applaud that. When you apply the Rhodium Rule to your life, it takes self-improvement to the next level. Your motive to improve and grow isn't solely for your own gain. Leaders who are in it for themselves are easy to identify, but we are all inspired by those who are willing to work hard and then show us how to do the same thing in our own lives. Finally, your actions must be observable. Like the Golden Rule, you cannot set an example unless people can observe your example. The Rhodium Rule only works when you live your life out loud in front of others, especially those people whom you are leading. This requires authenticity and transparency. The Rhodium Rule works in both the good and not so good moments of life. The people around you are watching how you respond to life, especially those times when life doesn't go as you might have hoped. Your reaction and response to mistakes, failures, blunders, and your own weaknesses will help others know how to handle their own. The Rhodium Rule isn't about being a perfect person. It's about being a person who is making progress. Here's an example from my own life. I remember a time when I lashed out at one of my student leaders because he was pushing for a proposal that I thought was ill-advised and poorly timed. While I had years of experience over him and might have been right, I confronted him poorly. I can honestly say I was not following the Rhodium Rule at that moment. When I had some time to reflect on the situation, as well as hear from a couple other people about how stunned he was by my verbal tongue lashing, I called him into my office. He hesitantly agreed to come in and sit down. "Before we say anything else, I need you to know how sorry I am for the way I spoke to you," I said. "I was completely wrong in the way I handled the situation, and I need to ask for your forgiveness." He paused for a moment. Then he looked at me and said, "I appreciate your apology. I didn't expect to hear that from you today. I am glad you brought me in to talk." At no point in the conversation did I offer any type of excuse for my actions. I took full responsibility for my outburst. I didn't blame it on anyone else or on the circumstances. I offered a clear, heartfelt apology. And in that moment, the Rhodium Rule was working. This was a situation where I needed to lead myself well by publicly owning up to my own failure. In doing so, I was setting an example of what an honest apology looked like. I'm reminded of how many times I told my own children to say, "I'm sorry," like you mean it. It's easier for them to do that when they've seen it authentically modeled by someone else. I wish I had kept my cool when I initially confronted this student, but I didn't, and I had to own my mistake. I humbly came back to him and shared my regret and my apology. The Rhodium Rule was applied to this situation. I wanted to be the type of person who took responsibility for myself and my mistakes. I wanted this rule to benefit this student. Think about the ways you can apply the Rhodium Rule to your own life. In what areas are you going to strive to be a good example? An example others can see and imitate. You need to make an investment in you so that you're better able to be an influence on others. Beyond obligation. A leadership position has certain responsibilities and requirements. The requirements are typically listed in the job description that goes along with the position. When you decide to serve in a leadership position, you accept the responsibility of completing all of the tasks, projects, and outcomes that are required in the job description. The job description is your obligation as a leader. The job description is there so that you know what you have to do. You serve in a leadership position in order to fulfill the duties the position requires. Of course, there is a style of leadership that allows a person to do whatever he or she wants in a position. It's called dictatorship. And while dictatorship is considered a form of leadership, it typically doesn't go well for the followers or end well for the leader. Fortunately, there is a place in leadership for doing what you want to do and not just what you have to do. But it only comes after you fulfill the responsibilities and requirements of your job description. I call it the opportunity that exists beyond obligation. You will be evaluated on your ability to meet the demands and deadlines of the work that is required of you. But I want to encourage you to live beyond the minimum requirements of your position. Don't let your job description set the bar for you. There are incredible opportunities that exist on the other side of your obligations. When you truly believe that leadership is not about you, you'll find the little extra beyond each obligation. You'll begin to see opportunity. Opportunities are the extra ways you impact and influence the lives of others. Something very special happens when you begin to do a little bit more than what's required. I know you are committed to follow through on your obligations. I want you to take it a step further. I believe you can make an even greater contribution. Start with your obligations, but be on the lookout for opportunities. See, obligation gets you going, but it's opportunity that will get you noticed. Obligation lists your tasks, but opportunity will lift your talents. Obligation is what you have to do. Opportunity is what you want to do. You can complete all of your obligations and people will thank you for doing your job. I want to challenge you to move through your obligations into the realm of opportunity. That's where people will recognize you for making a difference. If all you focus on are the obligations of your position, you might be tempted to do the least that's required for the most you can get out of it. But if you complete your obligations with an eye for opportunity, you'll find ways to do what's meaningful for the most others can get out of it. One of the main reasons people don't take the time to look for opportunity beyond obligation is fear. They're afraid to put themselves out there. They're afraid they'll make a mistake or look foolish. They don't want to do anything to stand out, so they stick to the job description. Some people hide behind the tasks of their leadership position because they're afraid to admit that no one is actually following them. They haven't connected with those around them. They haven't made the most of the opportunities to impact the lives of others. It has to be difficult when you're in a leadership position, but no one actually thinks you're a leader. I created a diagram called the impact graph. I use it with my students to talk about the difference between those who make an impact and those who don't. There's two lines, the x-axis and the y-axis. The x-axis measures the difference between impact and no impact. The y measures the difference between follower versus leader. As both those axes intersect, they create four quadrants. I've labeled each of the four quadrants. The lower right quadrant, between follower and no impact, is spectator. The upper right quadrant, between leader and no impact, is figurehead. The lower left quadrant, between follower and impact, is go-getter. And the upper left quadrant, between leader and impact, is revolutionary. I use this graph to illustrate the journey many take toward effective leadership. I want to inspire people to move from spectator to revolutionary. It's not enough to just show up and fill a spot. Those who do the least that's required of them live on the no-impact side of the graph. They don't want to take responsibility and aren't concerned with moving people forward. People move toward the impact side of the graph when they start to put their heart and soul into what they're doing. Whether you are in a position of leadership or not, you can make a difference. The secret is this. The more you find the opportunity beyond obligation, the greater impact you will make. The world is full of people who get up every morning and do the same thing they saw the last person do. They go through the motions and live with the lowest of expectations. So I have to ask you a question. Are you going to be different? When you understand that leadership is not about you, you'll look for ways to move into the realm of opportunity, to do a little bit more than what's required. Don't do it out of selfishness or greed. Do it out of selflessness and the desire to make a difference in the lives of others. The revolutionaries of the world exceed expectations. They've identified a problem and taken the responsibility to solve it. They impact others because they serve others. They don't settle for the status quo. They paint a picture of a better future. It's so compelling that others can't wait to be a part of it. And we call that vision. One more thing about the impact graph. A person moves from no impact to impact, and from follower to leader, through their passion and the permission of others. Your passion, doing the things you love to do, will pull you toward leadership opportunities. When you take the time to serve others beyond what's required of you, they will give you the permission to lead them. Sometimes that happens through an election or selection process. Often, it happens because people are drawn to someone who is going places. The people who are going places do what's expected, and then some. Did you hear those three words? And then some? This is the path to excellence. You are pushing yourself beyond obligation. You give a little more energy and creativity to the opportunities you see each day. The difference between ordinary and extraordinary is the extra. And then some. You see, if you procrastinate, you will have to settle for obligation instead of opportunity. If you only do what's required, you will have to settle for obligation instead of opportunity. If it's all about you, you will settle for obligation instead of opportunity. The path to opportunity is paved with those things that will inspire the best in others. Or to put it another way, your greatest opportunities will occur when you focus more on the people you work with than the work itself. Have you seen the professional ball player who was an incredible athlete and a horrible coach? Skill alone doesn't qualify one for leadership. It's the ability to connect with others and inspire them toward greatness that makes a leader worth following. The moment it becomes more about showing off your own skill than it is about serving their needs, your opportunities to lead will diminish. The leaders who make the greatest impact understand how meaningful the opportunities are beyond one's obligation. Howard Hendricks said it this way, "You can impress people at a distance, but you can impact them only up close." It's when you draw close to those around you that the opportunities start to reveal themselves. Too many leaders go through the motions, but not you. No, you will go beyond obligation, because now you know. You can take a simple, routine task and turn it into an opportunity to make things a little bit better. You not only want to do your best, you want to inspire others to be better as well. Take a moment and reflect on all of the tasks you have to do in your leadership position. These are important components of your role. Do them, and do them well. But let's take it a step further. How can you expand some of those obligations into opportunities? How can you go beyond what you have to do and incorporate some ideas of what you want to do? It's in the opportunities where you'll make the greatest impact in the lives of others. Moving from yours to ours. You carry the vision for the team because you're the leader. This means you have a clear and compelling picture of a better future. You can actually see it in your mind. You help those around you see that we can't stay here because we have to get there. Vision is a funny thing. It's just an idea. It's a reality that doesn't exist yet. It hasn't actually happened, but it could. It could happen if you find a way to get those around you to buy into this vision for a better future and start working toward it. For that reason, vision can't be the sole property of the leader. Personal vision must become shared vision. You want those around you to know it and own it. One way this happens is by giving them the why. The way you take a vision that's yours and make it ours is to give those around you the why. Take the why off of yours and hand it out. When you give the why away, yours becomes ours. Why equals why. Do you see what I did there? This is more than an exercise in spelling or a play on words. Those around you need to know why something is important before they'll own it for themselves. People don't like to be told what to do. You might be the boss, but no one enjoys being bossed around. Even as kids, we felt the need to know the why. When someone asked us to do something, we'd want to know why. The response of, "because I said so," just sounded like an authoritative demand that lacked a good reason. And I'm trying to count how many times I said that as a parent. Unfortunately, many leaders only focus their time and energy trying to get people to do the what, where, when, and how that's necessary to accomplish the vision. When you do this, you run the risk of keeping the vision yours instead of ours. It is the why that captures people's hearts. It motivates and energizes them to do their best work. People will buy into and commit to the vision when they understand and believe in the why of the vision. Effective leaders connect this why to the passions, needs, and desires of those around them. They help people see themselves in this picture of a better future. They don't just tell them it's better. They explain why this vision for the future is better than where they're at right now. You will leave those around you in the dark when you decide on a vision but don't take the time to describe the vision. When you don't describe the vision in terms of why, you rob the vision of its emotional power. Here are five observations I've made when it comes to turning yours into ours. Number one, when you ask someone to do something, tell them why it's important. That's empowering. Number two, why is a stronger motivation than what? Number three, people form groups and causes around why. Number four, you will get more extra effort when you give the why than you will if you only give the what. And number five, if you know why something is important, they'll surprise you with how they accomplish it. You connect those around you to the vision on a deeper level when you give them your why. They begin to see what they're doing as significant, meaningful, and relevant. And you'll know they've taken ownership of the vision and committed themselves to it when they start to talk about this shared vision and refer to it as ours. Listening is your greatest communication skill. I've watched a lot of capable people shy away from a leadership position because they had a fear of public speaking. In their mind, they thought effective leaders were the ones who gave speeches. That's a myth. Your greatest communication skill as a leader is not your ability to speak. It's your ability to listen. I like the way my friend Ryan Roberts puts it. The best leaders hit the ground listening. As a leader, you've got to listen or you'll soon end up with people who have nothing interesting to say anymore. Why should they speak up if they know they won't be heard? In one ear and out the other is more than a cliche. It's a sign of poor leadership. You heard them. You nodded your head. You even recited back to them what they just said. But listening did not take place. What was missing was the ability to understand what was being said. That's why the best listeners approach a conversation with a listener's and a learner's lean. They don't simply try to hear the words, they try to grasp the meaning. Things like eye contact, body language, focusing on a person and not your cell phone, and looking at nonverbals are more than posturing. They're tools that aid in the quest for understanding. It's not enough to simply hear someone. There's a lot of loud voices out there scrambling for attention. The question is, are we hearing what they're saying, or are we hearing what we want to hear? Objectively listening, which is seeking to understand without preconceived notions, is one of the hardest things to do as a leader. In all of the conversations you have, you are listening to others through the filter of your own life. This includes your experiences, your thoughts, and your own agendas. We hear through our own definitions of words. We hear through our perceptions and our intellect. We enter every conversation with a set of assumptions. It is difficult as a leader to do what Stephen Covey has recommended, to seek first to understand, then to be understood. Listening, really listening, takes time. When things get busy, we tend to listen a lot less. Too many leaders get caught up in focusing on all of the tasks and tactical challenges of leadership. Yet you make a tremendous impact and gain credibility as a leader when you connect with those around you on an emotional and heart level. Those types of conversations take time. If you want to get better at listening, you will need to get better at asking questions. Leaders engage those around them not so much by the answers they give, but by the questions they ask. Leadership is not about always being right. It's about finding the right answers. And finding the right answers can only come when you take the time to listen to others. The reason is simple. You only know what you know, and you don't know what you don't know. You must ask questions, and lots of them, to gain more information, learn more, and hear other perspectives. By listening to the responses of others, you help them see that you don't have all the answers, and you inspire them to help you find the best answers. Listening is like respect in that they both need to be earned. Those around you are more apt to listen to you if you've taken the time to listen to them. You take the time to connect with their heart before you ever ask them to do something. When you make those connections, people are more willing to hear your ideas. They will listen to you when they feel listened to. Before you enter into a conversation with someone, ask yourself, how do I want to make this person feel? Put yourself in his or her shoes. Listen with all of your senses. Every conversation is an opportunity to inspire people. Too many leaders don't listen with the goal of understanding. For them, listening is simply a chance to catch their breath so they can start talking again. When you understand that leadership is not about you, the way you listen to those around you will communicate louder than words. Find a reason to celebrate. I could tell our team was tired. We had just gone through a whirlwind of events. It seemed like we had lived in our conference room for the last month, preparing for each activity that fell on the heels of the last one. With every successful event, our team felt a little more depleted. Finally, the crazy, insane, busy period was over. We were all sprawled out across the tables and chairs, exhausted from our furious pace. One of the members of our team leaned back in his chair and sighed these words, "We don't party enough." That was a good reminder. Not that we needed to take something or do something to numb our senses. In that moment, he helped us all realize we had lost one of the most meaningful parts of being on a team. We weren't having fun anymore. We hadn't spent enough time celebrating what we actually accomplished together. If you're leading a group of people, it can be easy to fall into a routine of just doing the work. We push those around us to achieve goals, complete tasks, and do their jobs. But you know what happens? In our efforts to keep going, we forget to stop. We wrongly assume that celebrations are meant for the end of the year, not in the middle of our work week. It's one of those things that sits at the bottom of our priority list. What if we change that? What if you and your team put as much creativity into planning your celebrations as you do in planning and implementing your events? That's the kind of team I'd love to be on. You know what gets in the way of our celebrations? Evaluation. And I like evaluation. And maybe that makes me a glutton for punishment. But that helps me make my point. I think we go about evaluating our work the wrong way. Most teams tend to sit around the table at the end of an event or activity and take time to evaluate. In our effort to improve, we'll spend the majority of our time trying to figure out how to fix all of the things that went wrong. We start with the wrong and we try to make it right. What if we turn that upside down? By all means, fix the glaring errors that occurred, but let's change the focal point of your evaluation. I am suggesting you take 2/3 of your time and lead your team in the process of acknowledging what went right and thinking about how to improve in those areas. Then stop and celebrate how well you performed and the results you achieved. Pass out credit where credit is due. Highlight the highlights. Give people awards and accolades and a steady flow of high fives. In Leadership Starts With You, I challenge you to personally work on improving in the area of your strengths and delegating in the area of your weakness. If that principle works on a personal level, just think about how powerful it will be on your team. I know it might be difficult to change your mindset here. Perhaps you were conditioned just like I was. It started when we brought our report card home from school. You remember, it was the one where we did well in most of our classes. But there were one or two classes where we struggled. We weren't proud of that grade, and we weren't looking forward to having our parents see it. There it was, a lone D surrounded by an A, a couple of Bs, and a C. All we could see was the D. And in my case, so did my parents. They would gloss over all of the other grades and focus in on that D. They might have said something like, "Well, these are pretty good grades, but what happened here?" Or, "D's aren't acceptable in this house." Or, "What are we," that meant me, "going to do to get this grade up?" Most of that conversation focused on the D, and not much time on the other better grades. And we've carried that same mindset into the way we lead our teams. We think improvement can only come in the areas we do poorly in. But if we spend all of our time focused on fixing failures, it leaves little time for acknowledging and celebrating victories. By all means, learn and grow from the mistakes, but don't miss your chance to applaud those things that went really well. Congratulate the work that's great. Celebration is a huge motivator. It inspires others to perform and to continue to perform at a high level. Somebody a lot smarter than me put it very succinctly. What gets rewarded, gets done. Tom Peters, management and leadership guru, said it this way: celebrate what you want to see more of. This means we need to put rewards and celebration on the agenda. The most effective teams have learned how to do more of what works and less of what doesn't. One of the ways to encourage what works is to celebrate it when it happens. If you wait until the end of the year, you miss out on an opportunity to make your team even better right now. Just look at the positive impact celebration can have on your team. Celebrations make people feel like they did something significant. Celebrations promote teamwork because people bond when they accomplish something together. Celebrations affirm the goals and values of the team. Celebrations are a positive way to communicate the team's priorities. Celebrations create momentum. And celebrations strengthen relationships. Celebrations make you hit the pause button in your routine. They energize your team toward future success. As you implement celebration into the flow of your work, consider the following. Number one, there is no right way to celebrate. Tailor your celebrations around what your team will enjoy. Don't get stuck celebrating in the same way every time unless you are intentionally trying to create some type of tradition. Experiment with a variety of ways to keep things exciting and unexpected. Celebrations can range from a thank you note to a large-scale event. Secondly, whenever there is a significant accomplishment or transition, take time to celebrate. Transitions are difficult. Celebrating what went well helps bring closure and builds momentum for the next thing. Third, make sure celebrations have a purpose. While it's fun to throw a party, celebrations are most effective when they happen for a reason. Be very clear about who or what is being celebrated. Meaningless celebration will only dilute the effectiveness of other celebrations that do need to happen. Number four, make sure celebrations have a personal feel to them. Reward people specifically. Celebrating a team effort is important. In the midst of this, remember that personal recognition is very powerful, especially when it's tied to something that helps the team be successful. Finally, allocate resources for celebration and rewards. Celebrations don't have to cost a lot of money, but if you make celebrations part of your team's culture, make sure you allocate resources to make these times meaningful. The level of celebration should match the amount of work and effort that went into creating the success. Leadership as an act of service. What if you viewed leadership as a platform for service rather than a position for power? It's a rhetorical question. That means you can answer it now in your mind, or you can walk with me through this chapter as I make my case for the first option. Once you're all set up in a leadership position and you've assembled your team, there's a couple of questions you need to answer. Number one, what do we need to do? Number two, how are we going to do it? Let's tackle the first question, what do we need to do? This is a question about vision. Leadership is necessary when a group of people attempt to move together in a certain direction, the same direction. It may be coordinating an event, a cause, or a bunch of projects. It might be winning an award or competition. The thing is, you need to know what it is this group needs to do to make that happen. Finding clarity around a certain direction can come in the form of goals or objectives or milestones. Basically, you need to be able to identify how to get from here to there. Here is defined as where you're currently at in the present moment. There is where you want to be. In order to move from here to there, you and your team have some work to do. There will be changes that occur. Your hope and dream is to accomplish each task in a way that brings you closer to the different reality you've identified as there. Staying here doesn't require leadership. If a group of people want things to remain the same, accept the status quo, and do what they've always done, they don't need much guidance. But getting to there takes movement. It takes action, and it needs leadership to always point toward there so everyone knows where they're going and do their best to go there together. The second question is a strategic question. How are we going to do it? Once you identify the what, you need to consider the how. You have to figure out how you're going to lead your team. You must decide what type of leader you're going to be as you move your team from here to there. There are probably as many unique leadership styles as there are leaders. But for the sake of this chapter, I am going to give you three of the more prominent choices. You can be the type of leader who A. demands, B. manipulates, or C. serves. I know you're a clever reader and you've already guessed which style I will advocate for. You did see the chapter title, didn't you? But let's go ahead and take a look at the first two. Leadership is often seen as a position of power, whether actual or perceived. You've probably seen or worked for people who have been placed in a leadership role and immediately assume this means they can tell people what to do. They make demands based on the authority of the position they hold. They demand obedience. They demand work be done. They use their authority like a club. People submit because they have to. Do you enjoy following leaders like that? Do you respect leaders like that? My friend Ed Robinson says the only real use of power is to give it away. Making demands based on the authority of one's position is one of the lowest forms of leadership. It might accomplish what you are hoping for in the moment, but it will slowly dissolve the fabric of a team. Sometimes people abuse the power of leadership through manipulation. Manipulative leaders often use guilt or shame to coerce people into action. They hold rewards or punishments over people's heads in order to get what they want. They play on the emotions and character of others, leaving people feeling used and abused. The demanding or manipulative leader can have the same vision of what there looks like, but they slowly lose influence over the group because of the way they lead. People begin to feel mistreated. They go about getting to there in a completely different way than the third type of leader. This is the leader who serves. A leader may need to be demanding in a time of crisis. There may be a moment when a leader needs to coerce someone to do the right thing. But it's the leader's overall style I'm addressing here. It's found in the one or two words those around you would use to describe your leadership. What would they say about you? When you truly understand that leadership is not about you, your best move is in the direction of serving others. It is radically different than the demanding or manipulating leader. Here are some characteristics I've identified in a leader who serves. A leader who serves puts the needs of the team members before his or her own. A leader who serves cares about people, not just what people can do. A leader who serves identifies what each person needs to do and helps him or her accomplish it. A leader who serves gives credit to the team instead of taking the credit for him or herself. A leader who serves offers encouragement and support to team members. A leader who serves is just as concerned with the journey toward the goal as he or she is with reaching the goal. A leader who serves wants his or her people to grow through the process of moving forward. A leader who serves will model serving in front of his or her team so that they might better learn to serve each other. A leader who serves sees serving as strength, not weakness. The paradox of leadership that's not about you is evident here. The leaders who inspire aren't actually motivated to lead people. They are motivated to serve them. It is a subtle twist of logic. People follow leaders because they know that the leader is looking out for them and their interests. By serving others, you will earn the loyalty and respect that leads them to serving you back. Measuring perceptions. One way to measure your effectiveness as a leader who serves is to get feedback from those around you. The following tool can be filled out by others to evaluate their own perceptions of your leadership. You have my permission to make copies of this tool or to distribute it in some other manner. Hand it out to those whom you lead. If you are a leader who values excellence, then you won't fear evaluation. In this tool, participants will rate you on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being that they strongly disagree, and 5 being that they strongly agree. How would your people on your team rate you according to the following? This person puts my best interests ahead of his or her own. This person does everything he or she can to serve me. This person sacrifices his or her own interests to meet my needs. This person goes above and beyond the call of duty to meet my needs. This person seems alert to what is happening. This person is good at anticipating the consequences of decisions. This person has great awareness of what is going on. This person seems in touch with what's happening. This person seems to know what is going to happen. This person believes that the organization needs to play a moral role in society. This person sees the organization for its potential to contribute to society. This person encourages me to a community spirit in the workplace. This person is preparing the organization to make a positive difference in the future. Another way to use this tool is to fill it out for yourself and then compare it to the results you get from others. You can use your results as a way to encourage others in conversation about their perceptions of you.